Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, I think of it as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One facet of that war that gets very little attention most of the time, maybe episodically some aspect of it or another jumps out at us, but by and large it goes unremarked, is something that is so central to our security that it's extraordinary how rarely those of us, at least in civilian life, even consider it, let alone recognize what's being done to it. And that is something called the culture of the military. It's what makes the military of the United States. And it is under assault across a very broad front. I'm very pleased to say that we have with us one of the few people who really does understand this, at least one of the few civilians who does, and more to the point, who works tirelessly on behalf of the men and women in uniform for whom the culture of their institution is of surpassing importance. She is Elaine Donnelly. She founded and is currently the president of an extraordinarily important organization, the Center for Military Readiness. She has served in a number of different official capacities on related issues, including the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services. Back in the 1980s, she was also appointed to the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces in 1992. She has worked, as I say, in this regard for now decades and is really one of the go-to people on matters like that, that has, in fact, linked back to the front pages with an announcement yesterday by the Secretary of Defense of a new report by the RAND Corporation about the extent and the nature and the reporting of sexual assaults in the United States military. I'm very pleased that Elaine Donnelly is giving us a full hour of her time to talk about that report and so much more. Elaine, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I just want to say publicly again how much I appreciate all that you do and how delighted I am to have a chance to talk with you about these issues in detail.
Well, Frank, I appreciate everything you do, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
It is heartfelt, and more to the point, it is well-deserved. So let's start, Elaine, with this report and the Secretary of Defense's comments and some of the responses that it's already engendered on Capitol Hill.
The issue of sexual assault in the military is just huge. Every year, the annual report that comes out gets more and more attention. The one that came out yesterday had two parts, but only the survey that was done by the RAND Corporation got a lot of the attention leading in and during the news conference. But there's actually two reports at work here. Both of them are bad, but one of them is more important than the others, and I'll explain. RAND said that about 19,000 people, men and women, had issued reports or told the Pentagon in a survey that they had been subjected to unwanted sexual conduct, USCs. Now, they've changed that definition a bit, and I won't get into all the details, but the 19,000 figure, large as it is smaller than it was in 2012. So they're billing this as, well, this is a good thing. The reports have gone down. But if you look elsewhere, the actual numbers, the numbers of cases, you find a different story. The numbers, first of all, are much smaller. The estimates are about four times greater than the actual numbers. And if you look at the actual numbers, you find a very steep increase since 2012. In fact, it's a 62.9, let's say 63% increase in only 2 years in actual cases. The numbers just since last year went up 8%. But you see how it's carefully couched. The 50% jump from 2013 is sort of disguised the way that the rollout occurred in this year. And RAND has pretty much orchestrated this whole thing. What's the bottom line? Numbers are going up. We know this, 4,680 is a number for 2014. That's a real number, a hard number, not an estimate. That is 63% higher than it was 2 years ago. Now, what are we going to do about this? Well, the report indicates the Department of Defense has done an awful lot, and they are showing some concern about due process. But along comes Senator Gillibrand, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. She has a bill that she thinks will solve all the problems. Now, personally, I think this whole rollout, the build-up to it, no matter what came out in that report, Senator Gillibrand would spin it as an excuse to pass her misguided bill, which would take cases of military adjudication regarding sexual assault and other cases, take it right out of the Department of Defense and commander's control, and put it somewhere else in specialized commands.
Elaine, let me just interrupt you because I think we've gotten some very important information on the table, and let me just double back so I got it and our audience hopefully did as well. Again, our guest is Elaine Donnelly, the president of the Center for Military Readiness, and she understands these issues as well as anybody in the country. But to make sure the rest of us do, you're saying, if I hear you right, that the numbers of sexual assaults in the military are increasing markedly in recent years. The numbers that are being reported are also increasing. But that this effort to suggest that that's a good thing, that more are being reported as somehow obscuring the larger problem, is a bad thing. Have I got that about right?
It's very confusing. Actually, the estimated numbers, I call them the virtual numbers, are lower this year than 2 years ago. The virtual survey is only done every 2 years, okay? So those numbers are lower. But the real numbers, which are much lower than the estimates, about only a fourth of the estimates, the real numbers are going up, and they're going up steeply. This problem is persisting. And as real as that problem is, two things. It's not that much greater. Actually, it's starting to catch up with the civilian world, those numbers. But Senator Gillibrand has a bill that would disrupt the very unique form of justice, the code of military justice. She wants to take these kinds of cases out of the hands of local commanders and take them to somewhere else where it's not the actual commander who's making the decisions.
And Elaine, the argument for doing that, as I understand it, is that some of those who are the victims of these crimes are reluctant to report to their superiors that they have been raped or assaulted in some fashion.
That's the spin, but the truth is there's no problem with reporting. The report is replete with indicators. The percentages are very high. People are comfortable with being able to come forward. There's all kinds of support systems available to them. Just tons of money has been spent so that people can feel comfortable making a complaint of sexual assault. But all of these things that are happening, it doesn't please Senator Gillibrand, who has become fanatic on this issue. And unfortunately, senators who should know better, such as Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Rand Paul, and some others, Senator Grassley, they have endorsed her bill. And I'm not sure why. I think it's because we all feel emotional and upset about anyone being sexually assaulted. We know it's a problem. We know the problem is getting worse. But her bill is not the solution. It would only disrupt the very unique form of military justice that has to have commanders in control. You can't turn it over to lawyers who don't have the responsibilities of command.
At least if what you're concerned about is unit cohesion and the ability of these units to perform as military units in time of need. And Elaine, there are two points of this that we don't have time to do justice to at this point, but we're going to come back to in the course of our extended conversation. One is the extent to which a sort of under-noted but very worrying phenomenon is the number of male-on-male sexual assaults that are taking place in the military. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment as a part of our discussion of another part of the, social engineering that's taking place in the military today, the introduction of open homosexuality into the uniformed services. And secondly, we're going to come back in the third segment to talk more about whether this problem of sexual assaults on females is in part a function of more positions in the military being opened to them, including some combat positions in which they are really exposed not just to enemy action, but of course perhaps to increasing predation by sexual predators in our own troops. Elaine Donnelly, stand by. We're going to be coming back to you with that and much more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio, focusing on the largely unremarked phenomenon of the wear and tear now taking place in the culture of our military and what it might mean for its ability to perform the missions we all need it to do. It is a function of what I think of as social engineering, and there are a few people in the country who have understood this better, worried more about it, and warned the rest of us of what's afoot than our guest, Elaine Donnelly, the president of the Center for Military Readiness. And Elaine, we were talking about at the tail end of the last block this phenomenon of male-on-male sexual assault as well. And I'm wondering whether what may be going on here has something to do with the opening of the military by President Obama, with the consent, I think, to their lasting shame, under rather extraordinary circumstances, of the Congress, to these avowed homosexuals. I remember vividly a man who fought very, very assiduously against this. He was the former commandant of the Marine Corps, General Carl Mundy, a remarkable man, a friend of both of ours. And he made a point to both of us, I think, probably repeatedly, that in the military, we're talking about the one special interest that can't speak for itself. And you led the fight with his help, and it was quite extraordinary, against this Gays in the Military initiative. Very quickly, summarize how it seems to be working out and whether it may have something to do with that other problem we just discussed.
Well, the military is unique. It's because people in the military have to follow orders. This makes it a prime venue for social engineering. And we're starting to see a phenomenon, especially with out groups or outside groups like RAND Corporation coming into the Department of Defense. They have a very close kind of a sweetheart relationship with the Department of Defense now. And they're the ones making proclamations about whether things are a problem or not a problem. But people in the military really don't have a say, except through the surveys that are interpreted by others.
We're visiting with Elaine Donnelly, the president and founder of the Center for Military Readiness. And Elaine, we were just talking a little bit about then General Counsel of the Defense Department, Jay Johnson. You and I both met with him at the moment that he was supposed to be surveying the sentiment of the troops and taking stock of the implications of gays in the military. Remind me and share with our listeners what he did in that role and how it contributed to the problem we're having today.
Jay Johnson co-chaired a so-called working group that was supposed to study the impact if the law regarding gays in the military was repealed. And it went on for about a year. And among other things, a very key element was surveying the troops to find out what they thought. Well, it turns out that the survey was being spun, an executive summary was being written by Jay Johnson in July of that year, 2010, before the survey even went out. How do we know this? Because a very contrived story was somehow leaked to the Washington Post just before the third vote on gays in the military in December of that year. And it said, 70% of people in the military are okay with repeal. Well, that's not exactly what the military people said. In fact, it was way off base, especially with regard to the combat troops. But the administration got away with it. Jay Johnson was a key figure in this entire operation. He was writing the results of the survey before the survey even went out. How do we know this? Because the Department of Defense Inspector General investigated after you and I asked for that some kind of investigation to be done. And at that time, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, did do that. But the report itself did not come out until it was way too late. In fact, it was sent to me by a source and might never have seen the light of day. This kind of action by a person who is now the head of Homeland Security is very disturbing.
Elaine, let me just ask you, because this is really the crux of the matter. If, in fact, this was a problem for good order and discipline in the military and therefore for readiness of military units, and this was concealed from the Congress, and it has now been translated as a result of that concealment into the approval of homosexuals in the military. And you know, the point is endlessly made that there have always been homosexuals in the military. The issue was whether they could, in fact, you know, conduct themselves openly as homosexuals and have all of the, you know, benefits of homosexual marriage and all the rest of it. And it was denied at the time. The bait and switch, really, that was perpetrated is as much as part of the scandal as anything. But how is this working out, as best you can tell, in the military at this point? Is it a problem or not?
You have to look very carefully in the depths of the report that came out yesterday. The provisional statistical data on sexual assault, if you look very closely in a format different than was reported before, you see that the number of incidents involving males as victims, it's gone up to 17%. Last time when the report came out in 2012, it was, I think, well, it depends. It was 12 or 14%, depending on whether the report was public or not public, restricted or unrestricted. Any way you look at it, this is an increase. This is a significant number. I don't have all the details because it's not being reported in the same way. In fact, they've got new terminology, and it's almost, the terminology is so graphic. I mean, I'm reluctant to say, but it incorporates the, well, let's say the sex act that defines homosexuality. It's either that or it's something else. And they divide everything up based on those categories, but they don't show the gender of the victims or the perpetrators in a very clear way, the way they did in previous years.
So is it fair to assume, if it's so, then it compounds, really, the perfidy that we've seen from the likes of Jay Johnson, who was, by the way, I think it's fair to say, rewarded for engaging in it and getting this done for the president. Elaine, let me talk to about one other thing. At the time when the gays in the military issue was being promoted, you were among those who warned that it was predictable that we would subsequently find transgender individuals' rights to serve in the military. And by the way, I don't believe there is a right to serve. It is an honor, a privilege to serve, but none of us has a right to do it. In fact, it has been for many years the fittest of us who have been able to do it, and not just anybody. But talk a little bit about what is now afoot. Well, you mentioned the RAND Group. Another of these special interests is the Palm Center. They're now saying the military is ready for transgender individuals to join as well. What's up with that?
Some very interesting things have been happening. Just the other day, there was a news report that the Army has decided to yield to pressure to change the names of persons who have transgendered and changed their name, say from Susie to Sam, or Sam to Susie, backward or forward. The problem is, if Sam was in the military all those years, that's what the public record says, and that's what the record should say. Now, if it's changed later and you attach, you staple the court order, okay, Sam is now Sally or something else, that's different. But it looks like, and I have to verify this, it looks like they're asking that the entire record be changed, even though that is not done for other classes of people who change their name.
Elaine, we have to pause. I want to come back to this because what we're really getting at here is a complete corruption of what is at the core of the culture of the military, namely the integrity and the honor and the discipline associated with it. And this is such an important point that I don't want to give it short change. So stand by. We'll be talking about it and much more with Elaine Donnelly of the Center for Military Readiness right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Pentagon announced yesterday that sexual assaults are continuing to rise in the U.S. military. Politicians are scrambling to denounce this misconduct, but
failing to recognize that their policies and those of President Obama are surely contributing to the problem. The truth is that social engineering of the armed forces at the hands of feminist, homosexual, and transgender zealots is compelling the armed forces to spend more and more time dealing with a host of sexual, legal, and policy issues at the expense of combat readiness. Morale, retention, and recruitment are being impacted. Inevitably, so will be the uniformed services' ability to perform the one mission that matters most, protecting the rest of us. At the very least, let's not make matters worse on all counts by putting women into frontline combat positions. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. So now that the nuclear talks with Iran have been extended for a second time, how should Congress respond? Predictably, the Obama administration is urging Congress to hold off on new sanctions and to give diplomacy a second chance. Many members of Congress disagree, however, contending that the talks with Iran have failed to stop or slow its nuclear program and are certain to result in a weak final agreement. For example, Republican Senator Mark Kirk said after the extension, "We're definitely being played by the Iranians." Senator Kirk is trying to win a veto-proof majority for sanctions against Iran in the new Congress in January. Congress needs to act decisively to put an end to the dangerous nuclear negotiations with Iran by passing sanctions that take effect immediately until Iran comes clean on its nuclear program, complies with all UN Security Council resolutions, and allows IAEA inspectors full access to its nuclear facilities. I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Elaine Donnelly of the Center for Military Readiness. She is one of the country's most knowledgeable people about matters involving the culture of the military and certainly one of its most courageous defenders of that proposition that there is and must be a distinct and honorable culture that enables the men and women who serve to do so with confidence. And Elaine, it's under assault, as we've been talking about thus far in the program in multiple directions. But just to pick up on the point that we were discussing at the end of the last block, we're now looking at more cooking of the books, more changing of even the fundamentals of the identity of people, because evidently some of them that we're being told have to be given an opportunity to serve have, challenges with respect to their sexual identity. Where does this leave a unit? Just for the moment, you're talking probably mostly to a group of civilians in this audience. I think probably many of them have served, but just help the rest of us understand what it means in submarines, in forward operating bases, to have people with the unique needs of women or of transgender individuals and the like for everything from, you know, showers and latrines to, you know, privacy or the lack thereof.
Well, what we have now is a new policy, and we call it LGBT law, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender law and policies. The administration is fully in support of all elements of LGBT law, even though the transgender element is not fully implemented. The president is threatening to do that by executive order. And that's why when the ACLU announces that the Army's Board of Correction of Records is going to change names to reflect a transgender situation, it makes you wonder, is this really a true story, or is it a spoof that you would see on Saturday Night Live? We have to investigate and find out, because you cannot change the gender of a person when they were
retroactively.
Yeah. You can't do it retroactively. You can't do it prospectively either. That person is still a person of one gender or the other. But to get the military involved in all of these questions, it's everything that we predicted in 2012 has come to pass in one degree or another, and some of the results are still unfolding. The effect on marriage, the questions about marriage benefits for same-sex couples, we know where the administration is going with that, even though they denied it completely in 2010. Jay Johnson was part of that, of course. We know religious liberty has been threatened, and we know the numbers of sexual assault, male on male, have increased, even though the Department of Defense, it's part of their report, but they really bury it in all kinds of spin. So all of these things are happening, and you really do feel bad for people in the military because they have to live with all this stuff. It's not their fault, but they have to kind of cope with all of the consequences of social engineering.
And I want to come back to that, Elaine, in our last segment, because I think it really goes to the heart of whether, in fact, in an all-volunteer force, people will wind up saying, you know, I don't have to live with this. I'm not going to put up with it, at least the best people, the people that you want, you need. But we'll talk about that in a moment. Let me turn to another issue that you've been very involved with at the Center for Military Readiness. And again, I commend you for doing so. These are among the most thankless of tasks in, you know, the entire public policy arena, as best I can tell. And you have really stood the lonely watch and helped the rest of us understand what's going on. But talk a bit about the women in combat issue and what is happening. Again, I'm afraid some of the warnings that you've been issuing about standards being lowered in order to accommodate women who just physically are incapable of performing as men have and as we need the special operators and others to be able to do. Is that so? And if so, what are the implications?
Of all the issues we've discussed, this one is probably the biggest because it affects everybody in the military. The administration is determined, they've already announced, that they want women to serve in all types of units, including the direct ground combat units, the ones that attack the enemy. And that definition is important because women have served with courage and we're proud of all of their service in harm's way. Yes, they have been there, and their courage is not in question. But the units that attack the enemy are infantry, armor, special operations forces, Navy SEALs, and the like. Those units require great physical strength. Women do not have it. Every physiological study ever done just confirms that. Well, the Marine Corps has been in the forefront of doing research on this subject. Very dutifully, they have gone about this. Well, not all the data has come out unless you read the website of the Center for Military Readiness, because we not only obtain preliminary data, this is a preliminary report, we analyzed a lot of issues that are not being addressed right now. And I'll just throw out just one data point. On a test that was done simulating ordnance stowing with 95-pound artillery rounds, less than 1% of the men failed, compared with 28% of the women. Now, should we open up this particular MOS to women, knowing that the failure rate is not only what it shows, but it would be even greater in actual operational situations? I've got four or five.
Especially over
examples.
Sustained periods of time, not just
over sustained periods of time.
A test,
right?
Exercise.
There's just no way that you can consider women and men interchangeable. So this is an anti-woman policy. More than 92% of Army women in an official survey said they wanted nothing to do with assignments in direct ground combat, but their voices are not being heard any more than the men's voices are being heard.
In favor of sort of the feminist lobby that is insisting that they all have to be exposed to this and may well be ordered to assume these responsibilities,
well, that's
whether
right.
they want it or not.
Should the all-volunteer force fail? And even if it doesn't, the ACLU will very quickly go to court, as they've already done it several times, to say that selective service discriminates against men. They'll bring the case on the part of men and say, well, women should be involved in selective service. In theory, you can say, oh, what's wrong with that? The problem is women are not physical equals of men. So to treat them as if they were is unfair to women. It's also unfair to the men, because in order to make that work, you have to lower the standards to accommodate the physical differences between men and women.
And Elaine Donnelly, are you seeing that happening now in the interest of imposing on the military this regimen, this feminist agenda, if you will, of putting women into all of these positions, whether they're fit to serve or not?
It's happening in subtle ways because standards are being changed without public notice. In some very high-profile situations, however, like the infantry officer course that the Marines have at Quantico, more than 20 women have tried out on that course. None of them have succeeded. Only 4 got past the first day. So they are maintaining their standards for now. But here's the problem. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, the general, said, well, we have to have gender diversity metrics. We have to have a critical mass, a significant cohort. When you start mixing in the demands for gender diversity metrics, that means quotas, then you have to lower the standards. You have to make them equal but lower than they were before. So a lot of this has yet to play out because it's not fully in effect until January of 2016.
And give us again, Elaine, translate if you would, for the layperson, the civilians among us without military experience, how this in practice affects readiness, affects unit cohesiveness, affects the ability of the men in the unit to fight as they must, let alone the whole unit.
When you say that minimal standards are acceptable, the minimal standard that some women might be able to meet, what you do is lower the standards for the men. You challenge them less. They will therefore be less prepared for the realities of direct ground combat, realities that have not changed.
If anything, they're getting worse.
Yes, absolutely. The weights carried on the back of soldiers today is, well, it's just as much as in the days of Julius Caesar. The weight, 120 pounds for a 20-mile march, I mean, these kinds of realities are not going to bend to the demands of feminists because they want to have theories of gender equality proven by the United States military.
Elaine, we're going to pause for one last block here. We're going to talk more about the implications of all of these social engineering initiatives and experiments being now imposed relentlessly without regard for their implications for military readiness and the ability of the military to perform the missions they must for all of us, with Elaine Donnelly of the Center for Military Readiness, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the final segment of this very special conversation with Elaine Donnelly, the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness, formerly an official with the Defense Department's Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, and also commission member of the Commission on Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. She knows her stuff, and she speaks for that special interest group that is former Marine Corps Commandant Carl Mundy used to say, otherwise really has no voice, namely the men and women in uniform who are now being subjected, as we've been discussing throughout this hour, to an extraordinary degree of social engineering, guinea pigs, if you will, to advance a feminist or a homosexual or a transgender or others' agenda more broadly for our society. And let me just hasten to add, I think, Elaine, I speak for you. I know I speak for myself. This has nothing to do with how one feels about women or about homosexuals or about transgender individuals, for that matter. Live and let live, as far as I'm concerned. This has to do with what we are witnessing as one or the other of these elements are being imposed upon a very unique institution and one that must work under very difficult circumstances.
That's a very important point, and I really don't claim to speak for military women. What I do say and chronicle all the time is that their voices are not being heard. And so I analyze the policies that are being imposed on both women and men in the military. They are not to blame for these policies, but women will get the blame when things start to go wrong. Resentment will be the price paid, and women are going to feel the worst of it, and that's most unfortunate. These policies are anti-women. If you take a woman who's at the top of her field in a position that's open to women right now, and you put her into an infantry unit where she has to compete with men, number one, she can't compete like they can. And even if she tries, she is going to have much more stress, much more difficulty. She will not be accepted. And then when they bring in more to have a critical mass, the situation will get even worse.
This actually goes to the heart of what I wanted to bring to you too next is, are we seeing, in addition to the problems within the units themselves that you've been chronicling, and again, what I admire so much about you, Elaine, is you're not just spouting off what you think things are like. You're talking about the data, what the military's own information is showing. But are we starting to see, when it comes to either retention or recruitment, the ripple effects of these policies as the all-volunteer force becomes, well, fraught now with these various social problems? For example, you know, are family divorce rates manifesting the problems arising from having men and women increasingly in intimate settings and all that flows from that for, you know, the folks back home?
I'll tell you that the data is starting to explode. There's so many things to be concerned about. I saw some hard data, recent data, from the recruiting command, the U.S. Marine Corps recruiting command. There is nothing in there that is good news for the Marine Corps. It's all bad news. You have a very low propensity already. You put women into the combat arms. You not only hurt the propensity of women, you hurt the propensity of men, the influencers. There is nothing good for the Marine Corps in that element of this discussion. If you look at the issues of pregnancy, PTSD, the numbers, the much more severe impact on women, physical impact, debilitating lifelong injuries, that information is being downplayed, but it's there. And I keep looking for it and writing about it.
Speaking of pregnancy, the impact on the units when women have to be pulled out because they've become pregnant in the course of being in these positions where intimate things happen.
And it's not hard to figure out. If you take one person out of a 9-man squad, an infantry squad, that's a pretty large percentage of that very small unit. And if you take percentages in large units and extrapolate them down to the small ones, you're asking for a lot of problems.
And again, it has the ripple effect of having impacts all up and down the personnel system, that you have to replace those people. You have to train the people who are replacing. You have to try to rebuild unit cohesion, or they're not replaced, in which case, you know, you're dealing with a 10-man problem with 9 people. Let me just ask, because again, you've chronicled this so carefully, Elaine, are we about to see things made worse in terms of the overrepresentation of the feminist minority who are not speaking for the vast majority, as you've indicated, 9 out of 10, perhaps, women in the Army, for example, when they pursue these agendas? In the National Defense Authorization Act, it's a deeply problematic piece of legislation in a number of respects, but is this one of them?
Yes, it is. One of the items put in there by a feminist from California, Loretta Sanchez, is a call for a 20% increase in the numbers of women at the service academies. The percentage is already quite large. She wants to increase it by 20%. Now, mind you, the Supreme Court earlier this year said that colleges in my state, Michigan, had a referendum, no racial or gender preferences allowed in this state. The Supreme Court upheld the right of Michigan to decide that. But here we have Loretta Sanchez saying, well, we'll have the service academies march in the opposite direction. This makes no sense. Another problematic element in this bill is a mandate for feminist meddling in the military misconduct cases that we were talking about and the SAPRO report is dealing with. I call this feminist pork. They want to set up a 20-member committee to be called the Defense Advisory Committee on the Investigation, Prosecution, and Defense of Sexual Assault in the Armed Forces. There is no place for a Pentagon Advisory Committee to be looking over the shoulders of litigants in actual cases and trying to skew them in the way that the feminists like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, the way she wants these cases to go. She feels that all accusations are automatically true, and a person who is accused is a perpetrator. A person who accuses is a victim, even though we don't know whether or not a crime occurred. And that kind of bias on her part, she wants an advisory committee there in the Pentagon to cause endless trouble and interference in these cases.
What you've described in the course of this hour are a whole host of very troubling aspects of this kind of assault on the culture of the military. At the minimum, what you've really helped us see is the United States military today is being preoccupied in a number of ways with matters that have nothing to do with their job of defending us. And in fact, in case after case after case, whether it's the sexual assaults business or whether it's the gays in the military or whether it's the transgenders or whether it's the women in combat, I think the data that you have presented at the Center for Military Readiness indicates it is going to make it harder for them to do their job. And it seems as though the administration either doesn't care or is actively trying to break the all-volunteer force. Would you go that far?
There is actually several political agendas, power bases that the president wants to please. Feminists, the LGBT crowd, the kinds of people who see the military as a venue for social engineering. This president is committed to deliver on his promises, one after the other. He did it by legislation, by imposing LGBT policies in 2010. He wants to do more by executive order. And yes, the members of Congress should be standing as a bulwark against this. Unfortunately, they are not. They are getting distracted with emotion. Well, we have this issue of sexual assault. Well, let's support Senator Gillibrand's bill, which is the wrong way to go. They have not had serious hearings on these issues we've been talking about since 1979.
It's a travesty, really. But for your work, I think that most of us would not even be aware of the nature of these problems, let alone the magnitude of them. And it is a travesty that Congress is not holding hearings, engaging in oversight. And I think that's in part because of, well, the pressure that you most especially have faced from these various interest groups. We must attend to that special interest group, if you will, that has no voice, namely the United States military. Elaine, I have to let it go at that, I'm afraid. I appreciate so much your work at the Center for Military Readiness and look forward to having you back on very soon. In the meantime, keep up that important work, and I hope the rest of you will come back to us again Monday, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.